Hello and welcome to the MDS Podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I'm Sarah Schaefer, the deputy editor of this podcast, and today I have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Hugh Morris, a movement disorders neurologist at UCL in Queen Square. It is Wednesday, October 8th, and we are here in Honolulu, and today, as part of the Congress series, we're going to be talking about the highlights from Tuesday, October 7th. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Did you wake up to a rainbow like the rest of us?
There was a rainbow early on. There was a big rain shower and a rainbow, yeah.
All right. So yesterday we started with the plenary sessions. What were the big takeaways from that for you?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. It's just to say it's great to be here. It's been a great meeting in Hawaii. We've been looked after very well by our hosts in Hawaii. So the first session this morning was on protein aggregate clearance in aging and neurodegeneration. I think that since synuclein SAA has come in and we've been able to look at protein aggregates in the CSF and in other tissues, that's really given a lot of insights into what's happening in neurodegeneration and Parkinson's disease in particular. And obviously one focus of that is actually what happens to protein aggregates as they pass through the nervous system, how they're degraded, how they actually end up causing toxicity and damage to neurons. So really this session was a great overview of some of the mechanisms that are involved in all of that and how we might get insights into disease and how we might develop new treatments based on this. So Lorraine Cullier really gave an overview of multiple clearance mechanisms. So she talked about the endosomal lysosomal system, so dealing with extracellular vesicles that are, and also free protein extracellularly and how that's dealt with by neurons. The autophagy lysosomal system, which deals with much bigger aggregates within neurons, the proteasomal system, and then the ubiquitin proteasome system, which deals with larger aggregates within neurons and degrades them through ubiquitin ligases. And she linked these to some of the genes that we know about that are involved in various conditions. In fact, this kind of went away from Parkinson's disease, so it includes some ataxia genes that are important in some of these mechanisms. So in terms of ubiquitin proteasome, STUB1 ataxia is a ubiquitin ligase, so that's involved with dysregulation, if you like, of the ubiquitin proteasome system. I think that one of my big areas of research is genetics, and I think looking at the genes that are involved, particularly in Parkinson's, I think they really highlight the lysosomal system. So LRRK2 and RAB32, which Lorraine highlighted, are important to the endosomal lysosomal system, and this kind of may be important in terms of cell-to-cell spread of toxic proteins. Then the other talks really talked about how this might be harnessed for therapeutics, and again, this is something that really transcends Parkinson's disease and encompasses other neurodegenerative diseases. So Suzanne Engelender talked about enhancing the autophagy lysosomal system, particularly with things like mTOR inhibitors, and there's been a lot of interest in rapamycin and also analogs of rapamycin that might be useful for neurodegeneration. And then talked about activation of the ubiquitin proteasome system with NRF1 and resveratrol and other compounds that can actually activate the system. The final talk was about really the rate of progression and spread through the nervous system and how that might relate to the progression of neurodegeneration. This is, of course, of great interest. We've been interested in this, and actually we had a paper earlier in the year led by Jabari looking at the rate of aggregate formation in SAA, the time to threshold, and how that correlates with progression to dementia in patients. And there seems to be, as would make sense, that the more rapidly aggregates are forming, the more severe the prognosis or the more worse the prognosis. It was a great basic science session linking in these processes to the neurodegeneration.
Absolutely. And then after that, we moved to a very clinical session that is very popular every year, the Grand Rounds session, where we saw four cases who were interviewed and examined by four experts. Anything you want to talk about with that session?
Yeah, I think, first of all, let me say that I think Dr. Michiko Bruno did a great job in selecting really interesting cases, and the panel did a great job in discussing them. So we had great discussants of these cases. And of course, we're absolutely indebted to patients who are willing to come onto stage to share their illness, what's happened to them for kind of educational purposes. I think really one of the really interesting things about this session was the way that Dr. Bruno selected cases that kind of highlight diseases that occur in the Pacific and Pacific populations, but not in other parts of the world. So the first case was a man who had very long-standing Parkinsonism that responded to levodopa-induced dyskinesias, but had a very long and benign disease course with very early onset. Now, certainly in Northern Europe, most of the people we see like this, we say we have Parkin disease or Parkin-like disease. In fact, this patient was Filipino and carried the common Filipino mutation L347P in the PINK1 genes. Actually, there's very high carrier frequency of this in the Philippines. So it occurs in about 3% of Filipino controls. So actually, this is something that's seen in the Pacific. Dr. Bruno and colleagues have written about other areas of the Pacific where this PINK1 mutation exists. And in fact, when I was doing some research on Guam quite a few years ago, we actually saw some patients with this on Guam a long time ago. So this is something that occurs in this part of the world and is not really seen in other parts of the world unless it's immigrant populations. The second case was glutaric aciduria. So this was a young lady who had very early onset progressive dystonia with very prominent bulbar formation, bulbar involvement, and turned out to be due to glutaric aciduria. Dr. Bruno highlighted that because of that case, this has been introduced into newborn screening in Hawaii and is something that's looked for as part of the newborn screening program. The SCAR8 case, sure, that is something that's particularly relevant to the Pacific. But the fourth case was probably the most challenging case, which was a patient with Parkinson's, Parkinsonism, probably a rubral tremor, a stroke, dementia, epilepsy, a very kind of complex multi-system disease, if you like. Dr. Espe, of course, gave a masterful discussion of the whole situation, but I think it's probably fair to say that at the end of that, most people did not know what the diagnosis was. The imaging was shown, which showed this high signal on diffusion-weighted imaging, the corticomedullary junctions, and Dr. Espe instantly identified this as neuronal intranuclear inclusion disease, which is due to expansions of the Notch 2NLC gene. In fact, this is something that's really only seen or predominantly seen in Chinese, Japanese, East Asian populations. This is not something we've seen in Northern European ancestry individuals. So again, this is something that's potentially an important disease in this part of the world, but not seen in other parts of the world. And I think this is really important to highlight diversity of different diseases that are seen in different parts of the world. So I found it a very instructive session. I really enjoyed the discussion and the learning points actually from the cases.
Yeah, I have to say that when Dr. Espe just instantly got it the second the MRI went up, it gave you something to aspire to. Yes.
Yeah, it was impressive. And like all of these things, once you see it and someone taught you, remember that from that point onwards. Yeah, we've looked for these, or my colleague Professor Henry Holden in London's looked for these cases and not found many in UK series of leukodystrophy patients. Yeah, but there's a lot more to learn, I think, in this area.
Moving on to the afternoon sessions, too many interesting and educational value to attend all of them, but anything that stood out to you?
Actually, I presented an oral poster presentation in the afternoon, so that was a highlight for me doing that. So I presented that on behalf of my colleague, Dr. Raquel Rial, who's not been able to travel to the meeting. I talked about using NULISA for the differential diagnosis of Parkinson's syndrome. So this is 120 proteins that can be measured actually in serum and looking at different profiles between Parkinson's, PSP, MSA. And I think early days with some of these technologies coming through, but I think they do show promise for being integrated ultimately into a sort of diagnostic process, particularly for clinical trials to enable early diagnosis of patients, perhaps with SAA, perhaps with imaging. We can see a kind of future where we have much more accurate early diagnosis before people develop all the pathognomic features of MSA or PSP or even Parkinson's when we know people's drug response. So I think we can think about future clinical trials involving this kind of multimodal approach to diagnosis, as well as, of course, giving potentially new insights into disease. And in the cases or the series that I presented yesterday, the Alzheimer markers, p-tau217, was showing up in our CBS cases that had been verified as Alzheimer cases, either pathologically or with biomarkers. We saw NFL and neurofilament heavy as well coming up as markers in the atypical Parkinsonism. So some things we knew about came up in the NULISA assay, but also some new things as well. So that was a very enjoyable session to be part of that. And there are a lot of other good, great oral poster presentations in that session, including one from Kelvin Look, looking at using SAA as a sort of drug screening tool. So looking at things that actually modulate sonuclear aggregation as a way of screening drugs. There's lots of exciting research that's happening. Later in the afternoon, I would highlight the atypical Parkinsonism session, which occurred later in the afternoon. That was a session in which there were a lot of updates on therapeutic trials, particularly highlight Dr. Amory Will's talk, in which she gave a review of trial development for atypical Parkinsonism, so PSP and MSA. She highlighted the PSP trial platform, which she's a co-lead. So this is a multi-arm, multi-stage platform study in which there are different drugs are going to be used in different arms with a shared placebo group for PSP patients. And obviously PSP is a rare condition. Actually, generally, clinical trials have recruited rapidly, but it's a rare condition. And obviously, the most efficient trial designs are going to be important in trying to develop new treatments. So that's a very exciting initiative, and we look forward to seeing the progress of that study. She also reviewed some other PSP-related studies, so the AAD vaccine trial, so anti-tau vaccine, the ALSA PROTECT study, which is using a drug which ASP2006, which upregulates progranulin. And she talks about the Arvinas study, so it's a PROTAC degrader of LRRK2, which is going to enter a phase one trial for PSP in 26. And she also reported on the results of the Amylyx study, which in fact were negative. So I think that was the an oral presentation of the Amylyx study, which was unsuccessful for patients with PSP. So I think there's a lot of progress looking through the whole day. As with a lot of MDS meetings, there's a great mixture of some basic science applied to neurodegenerative diseases, some sort of clinical learning points, and then talking later in the afternoon about therapeutics and how that's going to be converted into trials and what the current trial landscape is for our patients. So it was a great day yesterday at the MDS, and I look forward to another great day today.
And I'll give a little plug to one of the other Congress episodes that we recorded this week that will be released soon on tauopathies with Dr. Jaroslav Komta.
Yep.
So he talked about some of these trials that have both been ongoing and upcoming in PSP.
Yep.
Thank you for this great overview. It was not nearly as much as what was covered, of course, in today. And like yourself, I look forward to today's plenary sessions and other sessions, as well as, of course, the video challenge.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.